This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Nearly a week after the end of the midterms, we are still waiting to find out who will control the House. If Republicans capture the majority, it'll likely be by a much smaller margin than pundits and pollsters had anticipated. One reason, Speaker Nancy Pelosi could hand her gavel to her fellow Californian Kevin McCarthy. Well, the Supreme Court. Earlier this year, the justices let stand legislative maps that were racially discriminatory under the Voting Rights Act. We're going to talk about how that decision may have affected the midterms with Jessica Levinson, law professor at Loyola Law School and an expert on elections, redistricting, and the Supreme Court. Most importantly, however, on her extensive CV is that she is our legal eagle here on Press Play. Hello.
Most importantly, indeed. Hello.
So remind us where these maps were drawn, which states, and how they wound up before the Supreme Court.
Yes. So we're really talking about maps that were drawn in Alabama, Louisiana, and Georgia. And in all of those cases, lower court judges, district court judges said, I'm looking at these districts, and I think they violate Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which is another way of saying, I think they're illegal racial gerrymanders that you, for instance, packed all of the Black voters into one district so that they couldn't voice their views. They couldn't pick the candidate of their choosing in other districts. And what happened is, or what should happen, is that you redraw the district lines. If you found that there is an illegal racial gerrymander, then we know the solution. You say, go back and add districts. And that's what the lower court judges said in each of these cases. Go back and add a majority-minority district. What happened, of course, is that the Alabama case was actually appealed directly to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 order, said, yeah, we're going to go ahead and let those district lines stand for the election. The election was 3 months away, but they said, we're going to let the district lines stand because we're simply too close to the election. Basically, after that, a Georgia district court judge said, yeah, I think there's also racial gerrymander here, but I'm looking at what the Supreme Court just said about the Alabama case. And so we'll use these lines for the midterm elections. And something very similar happened in Louisiana as well, where the Supreme Court basically just put those lines on hold, saying, we're going to hear a case about redistricting in the fall.
Okay, so now that the midterms have come and gone, or sort of gone, what does that mean for these cases?
So, right, now that the midterms are here and they're gone, and what does it mean? Well, the court heard arguments the second day of the term on October 4th dealing with the Alabama case. So that case argued, the merits of that case were argued. And given this particular court, I think it's just inescapable that they will probably whittle away at Section 2 Voting Rights Act protections. And that means we don't know if in the end these districts will have to be redrawn.
All right. So looking at the results of the midterms, can you draw a direct line between these cases and what happened?
I think you can. If there is really a Republican majority by only 3 votes, for instance, all we have to do, in my mind, is look at these 3 states where judges said you need to redraw, you need to add majority-minority districts. And we know in those states that the minorities do break heavily for Democrats. And see, really, that would have been an additional 3 votes. Now, of course, these midterms are also happening against the backdrop of a Supreme Court that said only less than 5 years ago, we're not going to weigh in on partisan gerrymandering. So we saw a lot of district lines where there's one party or another that really aggressively drew lines to try and pick up seats. And frankly, Republicans are typically better at that. And the last thing is, we saw that this is a midterm election that's held after the Supreme Court's 2013 decision in Shelby County, where they trashed basically half of the Voting Rights Act. So I think all of those things add up to, frankly, a Republican majority in the House.
Right. But you also have New York State, right? And they redistrict. And that was, they initially gave an advantage to Democrats, which was thrown out by a court there. So what about that state as the potential swing state in control of the House?
So I think that's a good point, a lot of people are pointing to, well, what about what happened in New York? I think that's different because in that case, what the judge found is there's a problem and they in fact remedied that problem. They redrew the lines. Now we can quibble with how they redrew the lines, but the point is that they found there was a problem and they said, okay, well, let's rectify this. In Alabama and Louisiana and Georgia, we know there's a problem. We know it's race-based and mm-hmm. we lived with it.
Okay, so moving on to the other side of the Capitol in the Senate, the Democrats do have control after Catherine Cortez Masto won re-election in Nevada, a squeaker there. So that means President Biden will have the opportunity to reshape the federal judiciary for two more years because the Senate confirms his judicial nominees. So what does that mean? Is he going to proceed quickly in filling these vacancies and how many are there?
I hope he proceeds more than quickly because President Biden was, of course, when he was senator on the Judiciary Committee, and he knows how important it is to fill these vacancies. There are 85 Article III vacancies as of today, meaning district court judges and court of appeals judges. And I think he absolutely understands that there is not a moment to waste. You know, we have a lot of discussions about, will the president be able to push through his legislative agenda? Will he be able to implement a program by executive order? And I think what we see time and time again is that's only the first question. The first question is, can you pass this legislatively or can you enact this by executive order? The next question is, will the courts uphold it? And so that's why you can't overemphasize how important it is for the Biden administration to fill those vacancies before even a year goes by.
Okay. And one case to illustrate that is the student loan forgiveness plan. And it's pretty confusing because there seems to be a new court decision almost every week. Didn't we just talk about this?
We did just talk about it, but that was actually a different case. There have been a lot of cases that have challenged the student loan program. That was a case dealing with six Republican-led states that sued, and that case was actually dismissed for lack of standing. Just this morning, the Eighth Circuit said, we're going to go ahead and push pause, a nationwide injunction on the Biden administration program while we consider this. But there's a separate case out of Texas that the court ruled on last Friday, I believe. And that was brought not by Republican-led states, but that was brought by two plaintiffs who basically were either totally ineligible or partially ineligible for the program. And in that case, a district court judge who was appointed by President Trump said, I'm also implementing a preliminary injunction. And so for that reason as well, the program is on hold.
Okay, so it all comes down to the fact that you cannot now apply. If you wanted to apply, you can't do that right now.
Exactly. There's a bunch of legal arguments here that I think are really meaty, but for people to understand, at this point, we've pushed pause on your ability to apply at all. I think about 26 million people have already applied. It will be sorted out in the courts. I think the final decision here should be that nobody actually has standing to sue to challenge this, but we've got to wait a little bit. And there's another option for the Biden administration for those people who have applied, where they could try and do this on a more case-by-case basis as opposed to this much larger program.
All right. Jessica Levinson, professor at Loyola Law School and, of course, our regular Legal Eagle here on Press Play. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fresh look at a death that shook the art world back in the 80s. A new podcast examines the death of artist Anna Mendieta. Her husband, sculptor Carl Andre, was found not guilty, but questions remain.
You know, history is long, and the judgments of a contemporary moment are just that, judgments for the moment.
That's next on Press Play.